and welcome to
Roadside Horror Show.
Thanks for joining us again on our road trip down the dark and winding roads of America.
Each episode, we'll take turns exploring the strangest true crime and paranormal stories we can find.
We'll devote two episodes to each state we stop in, sharing a true crime and paranormal story each week.
So buckle up as we continue our road trip through Pennsylvania.
Also known as the Keystone State or Quaker State, Pennsylvania is one of the original 13 colonies and the fifth most populous state in America.
With its rich history, Pennsylvania is a treasure trove of odd and unusual stories.
So, Nicole, what's your unusual story for today?
So, our first stop today is inside Spring Valley Park in York, Pennsylvania. Nestled inside the gentle rolling hills of the park is a two-story brown clapboard farmhouse. This farmhouse is actually at the heart of Hex Hollow and was the scene of a violent crime that shook the surrounding community and made nationwide headlines.
Ooh.
Excited.
I've never heard of this before, so please go ahead.
Before I dive in, disclaimer, there's a lot of German names, again, and I will butcher them because I'm not a German speaker. So feel free to write in and correct me. I am open to criticism.
As we all say we are until it happens.
I mean accurate. So Hex Hollow, formerly known as Ray Myers Hollow, is located outside of York, Pennsylvania, along the central Pennsylvania border with Maryland, and it's been home to the Raymeyer family for generations, and they actually migrated to this particular part of Pennsylvania in the 1840s. Our story takes place in the 1920s, however, when the hollow was home to Nelson Raymeyer, who was a devoutly religious farmer and renowned as a powwower. You heard of powwow?
My family, actually, my grandmother, she was able to do this really weird thing where she would take her freckles from her face and somehow move them from her face where she hated them and put them onto her shoulders. Don't know how the hell this works, but I asked my mom about it. And she's like, well, you go out in the morning and you touch the first morning dew and you can't do anything before this. You take the morning dew and then you put it on your face and you do this and you do that. And I'm just like, okay, says the woman who's like anti-witchcraft.
But she sure does know her folk magic.
She does, apparently.
And that's exactly what powwow is. It's also called boucherie. It's unique to Pennsylvanian Dutch culture. It's a folk magic that was brought over by the early German settlers to York and Lancaster County. It's not really witchcraft. It's part of the Christian faith healing tradition, actually. So a powwow practitioner will say prayers with patients and evoke folk remedies, simple things like herb poultices and teas that'll help alleviate ailments. A very popular text among practitioners was called Powwow or the Long-Lost Friend by a man named John German Holman, which was published in 1820. Holman was a Pennsylvania Dutch healer, and the book was a collection of folk and home remedies, as well as spells and talismans. So like things like you would have a prayer that would help you not get lost on the way into town, things like that.
Pretty cool. And it's also like the powwow is also where you see the hex signs that are on the barn, the really pretty circular, normally drawings, not really drawings, but whatever you call that.
They're drawings because they're like painted in circles. They're really like vivid colors.
Yeah. Above like the barns and everything. They're normally for like good luck or for health or things like that.
Yeah. You see them all through Lancaster County, especially.
Oh yeah. And even in this area, like the more rural areas close to here in Pennsylvania, like my grandmother lived in Lineport. And they definitely had one above the barn, so...
That's so cool. So Nelson Raymeyer would definitely have been familiar with not only these hex symbols, but also this book. Oh, how to pronounce Boucherie in German. This is going to be interesting. What?
You know, no.
That sounds like a straight-up demon.
What?
I'm not going to pronounce it that way. I can't pronounce it that way. My mouth doesn't make those sounds.
It's weird because, see, this is why I always get my German and French accents confused. They both have the thing going on. So, like, you, like, kind of almost put your tongue up to the roof of your mouth and then I don't even know how to do it. But we're going to cut all that out because I don't want to.
Alrighty. So, Nelson Raymeyer would have definitely been familiar with those hex symbols on barns and also this book called The Long Lost Friend, and shared similar spells and talismans with his friends and neighbors.
I just think that's kind of a cool name. The Long Lost Friend.
Yeah, it's very comforting.
It is.
So, among his friends and neighbors, they would always visit him pretty frequently in his narrow brown clapboard farmhouse in the hollow any time of day. He opened his doors for anyone who really needed help. He's a very nice man.
What is clapboard? Because I can't think of what it is at the moment.
It's like that very straight, kind of thin boarding that used to use as siding on houses.
Okay. I think I know what you're talking about.
It usually always runs horizontally on a house.
Okay, yeah. Now I definitely know what you're talking about.
So, because it wasn't unusual for Rehmeyer to open his door at all times of day, when he heard a knock on his door on the night of November 27th, 1928, he went to answer it. There stood his neighbor and family friend, John Blymeyer. John Blymeyer was accompanied by Wilbur Hess, his 18-year-old co-worker from a local cigar factory, and 14-year-old John Curry. Each one of them carried a thick wooden stick.
Yeah, that's not at all intimidating.
Yeah, definitely not neighborly.
No. I mean, I don't think I would open my door to those people, but...
Fair. So before I tell you more about what happened on that fateful night in November, let me tell you more about this guy, John Blymeyer. Because you really need to know where he's coming from to figure out how he ended up on that porch that November night. So for years, John Blymeyer suffered from a very nervous disposition, things like night sweats and anxiety and overall bad luck.
Hey, me.
Well, you didn't have a farm that failed.
No, not yet, anyway.
Well, don't be a farmer.
Give me a few years.
So his farm fails. A lot of his business ventures fail. His marriage even failed. He became convinced...
Well, that part I got down.
So just don't have a farm, because otherwise you're going to end up like Blymeyer.
No farm. And, well, I would say no business ventures, but there's this one, so...
This is more infotainment.
It is infotainment.
So, John Blymeyer has all this bad luck. Business is failing, his farm's failing, his marriage fails. He eventually becomes convinced that he's been hexed, and that the curse is really what's to blame for all of his just rotten luck. All the misery in his life comes from some curse that somebody out there placed on him.
Of course.
So he's desperate to find a solution. He seeks out several of the powwow practitioners in the area, trying to get help to alleviate this hex, but none of their remedies really seem to alleviate any of his suffering. Finally, he seeks out Nellie Knoll, who is also known as the River Witch of Marietta.
That's a really cool name.
Isn't it super
cool? I love it.
So he goes to Nellie Knoll because he hopes that she can identify the hex ray, which is the term for a malicious or bad magic practitioner who may have cursed him.
Which is probably also pronounced something weird that you can't say. Yeah.
So over the course of several sessions where Nellie Knoll charges Blymeyer $5 per session, which is pretty pricey in 1920s cash, she reveals the identity of his tormentor. She asks Blymeyer to hold open his hand and place a dollar bill in his palm. When she picks up the dollar bill, the picture of Nelson Rehmeyer appears. She tells Blymeyer to remove the curse. He must burn his tormentor's copy of the sacred powwow textbook, The Long Lost Friend, and bury a lock of Rehmeyer's hair 6 feet in the earth. Nelson Rehmeyer was a pretty large man. He was about 6'2", and even though he was 60 years old at the time of this crime, he was still pretty powerfully built from years of farm work. Blymeyer realized that the only way he could get the spellbook and a lock of his hair is if he had help, so he recruited Hess and Curry, convincing the boys that they were also hexed by Rehmeyer.
That's interesting. I mean, that's like, you know, ways to control people 101, you know, tell them, well, you know what, you guys were affected by this too, so you've got to help me.
Classic. You're on my side. Let's get this guy. So that's how Blymeyer, Hess, and Curry end up on Nelson Rehmeyer's door, November 27th, 1928, holding these thick wooden sticks. They mostly have the sticks to intimidate him, but as soon as Rehmeyer opens the door, they tackle him and tie him to a chair. So they beat him and demand to know where the spellbook is. Unfortunately, a poorly placed blow from Curry kills Rehmeyer around midnight.
Well, shit.
Yep. Now they have a corpse instead of just an unconscious dude who they gave a weird haircut to. So the three of them panic, and they don't really know what to do, so they decide, we're going to burn down the house so no one knows that we killed Rehmeyer.
Logical conclusion to come to.
Yeah, we're in a panic.
Burn down the house. I mean, that's what I'd do if I see a spider. I would burn down this house.
It's all gone. In ashes. To be fair, though, like, where the Rehmeyer Homestead farmhouse is, it's pretty isolated, so if they set the house on fire, chances are it'll burn completely to the ground before someone can put it out or notice it, really. So they douse Rehmeyer's body in lamp oil, set it on fire, hoping to burn down the house, hide all their evidence, and they flee the scene. Now, the weird part is that even though Rehmeyer's body's, like, doused in lamp oil, he's on the floor, wooden floor of his kitchen in a wooden house. The fire doesn't consume the house or his body. It leaves plenty of evidence behind that points to some foul play.
Which is just creepy that that would not burn.
Yeah, I guess it's, like, one of those weird, like, things where it just happened where, like, the window, something about the windows being open and it just extinguished the flame.
Or cause magic.
I'm open to that.
Yeah.
The interesting thing is that Rehmeyer's house is still there, and you can actually go visit it. It's a museum, and you can actually see the floorboards that were underneath him that have a little bit of his blood on it, and actually were singed before the fire was put out.
That's creepy.
It's creepy, but it's kind of cool.
Yeah. I mean, I would love to go there.
We can go.
Wait, how far? This is in York, you said,
right?
Yep,
it's in York.
Definitely. That's like...
Definitely day trippable.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's actually run by Rehmeyer's grandson.
Oh, that's really cool.
Yeah.
Good to keep it in the family.
Mm-hmm. So, because there's all this evidence, it doesn't take the authorities long to track down Blamire, Hess, and Curry. They all confessed to the crime pretty quickly.
That just sounded like a law firm.
Blamire, Hess, and Curry?
Yeah. Have you been injured in an auto accident?
Contact Blamire, Hess, and Curry. So they all confess pretty quickly. Kind of hilariously enough, when they were trying to find Blamire's house in the dark that night, they actually stopped at a house a little further up the hollow, which is where Blamire's estranged wife and two daughters lived. So okay. His widow was able to identify all three of them as looking for Nelson on the day or the evening that he died. So they all confess. Blamire even tells the authorities that he finally found relief from his curse since Rehmeyer died. So he's actually kind of happy that he's dead because Blamire no longer feels cursed.
Which is always great, you know.
Yeah, it makes you really question, like, his state of mind, right?
Well, I'm just glad he's dead.
I feel so much better.
Exactly. Well, it helped me, so.
So, Nelson Rehmeyer's murder trial began January 9th, 1929, presided over by Judge Ray Sherwood. Now, Sherwood realized that all of the references to witchcraft and powwow weren't exactly the image that York was really trying to project that time. Like, it was the 1920s. They were really trying to push the city into a more industrial, modern sensibility. So he has all mentions of hexes and witchcraft edited out of the trio's confession before actually adding them to the court records.
Which just seems weird because that would seem like the driving force. It was the actual motive. It was...
It does. And what he says is that the motive, according to court records, is going to be robbery. That they came there to rob Nelson Rehmeyer.
Well, I mean, you know.
Which they did. They wanted his hair in a spell book.
So, I mean, you know, I mean, that's what I do when I rob people. You know, just give me your hair and your spell book.
It's very specific, Eden. I don't have any spell books. I have hair, though.
It's a kink of mine.
Kink. So, despite Sherwood's best intentions to try to keep this, like, hex and witchcraft nonsense, according to him, out of the court record, the national press catches wind of this, and they start calling it the York Witch Trials, or the Hex Murders, and they dubbed the killers the York Hex Slayers. So this pops up in, like, Time Magazine and, like, the New York Times.
Well, yeah, because that name is awesome.
Yeah, it's a pretty cool name.
Yeah.
I mean, I would name my band.
Exactly, the Hex Slayers. I mean, then we might get confused with Slayer, though, and no one wants that.
No, but we'd have a big hex symbol on our bass drum, and it would just be...
That'd be perfect.
I thought about it.
Apparently.
So, underneath all this national press scrutiny, the trial gets underway. It lasts about 5 days. Blamire and Curry are both found guilty of first-degree murder and sentenced to life in prison. Hess, meanwhile, is convicted of second-degree murder and sentenced to 10 to 20 years in prison, mostly for cooperating with the authorities during their arrests. Hess and Curry were both paroled in 1934 and returned to York County, as did Blamire, who was eventually paroled in 1953. Luckily for the community, none of the men ever committed another crime during their lifetime. And actually, John Curry went on to be a pretty successful local artist. You can actually go to various houses or the Historical Institute, Historic Museum in York, and see some of his pictures that he painted.
That's kind of like, it's weird when that happens. It's like the movie The Heavenly Creatures?
Yes, Heavenly Creatures.
Yes, with Kate Winslet and...
Melanie Lynskey?
Melanie Lynskey, there we go.
Yeah,
because the person...
Juliet Hume goes on to be like a successful writer, right?
Yes, she's like a mystery author.
She knows.
It's just so weird. It's like, let's see, what did I do? Murder. What am I trying to get away from? Murder. What should I write about? Murder.
Equals catharsis.
Yes.
So that's the story of the Hex Hollow murders. I actually learned a lot about this case by watching a 2015 documentary called The Hex Hollow, Witchcraft and Magic in Pennsylvania by a York native named Shane Free. I highly recommend checking it out. It's a pretty good documentary. I think you can find it on IMDb Freedive.
I was just about to say, where did you find it? Okay, so yeah. Freedive's the thing that's just on my Fire Stick that I didn't put there, but is there.
It's so good. There's so many good old movies and also great documentaries.
That's like how I finally saw Miss Congeniality 2. I was like, I don't even want to watch this. And then
it takes place in Vegas.
When I saw it, I was like, ah, oh, fine, I'll watch it.
The pirate ship.
Exactly. Well, I mean, it was pretty, it was decent for a sequel.
Dolly Parton.
Dolly Parton's in it?
Oh, yeah.
I don't remember that, but okay.
She gets tackled.
Oh, shit. Yeah, she does. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Any other thoughts, last thoughts before we have a bathroom break?
I don't know. I thought that
pit
was
stop, a pit stop.
Pretty cool story. It was certainly one that I've never heard before in my life. I never even knew about that. So that was really cool.
Yeah, I had not heard about it until someone recommended the documentary to me. And I was absolutely tickled by not only like the powwow, but also Nellie Knoll, this River Witch of Marietta, which I was like, what?
Everything about this story is kind of catchy. The names, the everything. It's just, it's fun.
I'm honestly surprised no one's made it into a like an actual film or something.
Yeah.
Because it has all the elements of suspense that you'd want to see in like a true crime film.
It absolutely does. And they could even play up the supernatural element of it completely. Because, you know, anything that says based on a true story is just like, well, then there's what actually happened.
Then there's inspired by a true story.
Yeah, when it's so loosely based that you can't even say based on anymore. Inspired by.
Well, on that note, we're going to make a pit stop and come back with Eden's paranormal haunting story.
Absolutely. I can't wait to tell it to you, and I hope you all stick around.
And we're back. Game show host voice.
Game show host voice. I like it.
So, Eden, where's our next stop?
Well, we are actually going to the wonderful town of New Hope, Pennsylvania.
I've been there. Yes. I like New Hope.
New Hope is really great. I love New Hope. I was going there pretty much ever since I was a kid. It's a very beautiful town. Very, I don't know, I would say quaint, wouldn't you?
Yeah, laid back.
Yeah, there's very lots picturesque. Of, yeah, there's lots of stores. It's right by the Delaware River. And it's kind of weird, but pretty. There's like this, like, what is it, algae?
Sure.
Growing.
But it's beautiful.
But it's beautiful because it's like this weird jade green, and it almost looks solid, like you can stand on it. It sounds disgusting, but if you saw it, you'd think it was pretty too. Trust me. So yeah, we're going to New Hope, and this is the story of the Logan Inn, which is one of the oldest hotels in Pennsylvania, and possibly, I think, maybe the state. Okay, so the Logan Inn was established in 1722 and was originally a tavern called the Ferry Tavern. It's one of the oldest continually operating inns in the U.S. It's also the only New Hope hostelry in the National Register of Historic Places.
Hostelry is like totally like one of those SAT words.
Yeah, I had no idea what hostelry was at all, but it's just you look it up and it's like an inn. Great. Thanks, you had to say hostelry for no reason at all.
You're so fancy with your hostelry.
Exactly. The only reason I wrote it is because that's what it said on the page. Because, you know, I'm bad at notes, I guess. Yeah, research. So, anyway, the inn boasts 2 restaurants, live music, 18 rooms, and unique decor in each room.
So it's, like, pretty boutique-y, right?
It's got a lot of charm. I've actually stayed there before. It's very nice. And they constantly renovate it, but they renovate it to make it look more like it looked originally in 1722.
That's cool.
John Wells, who pretty much is responsible for everything in New Hope, was licensed to build and keep a ferry by the General Assembly of Pennsylvania in 1722 and a tavern in 1727. And the result was the Ferry Tavern.
Ferry, like the boat or like the mystical woodland creature?
Not the creature that floats about. It's the boat.
Okay, that makes sense. The canal,
Delaware. The canal, exactly. Gotcha. The name Logan Inn didn't come until the ferry had ceased operations about 100 years later. Even the name of the town of New Hope is a new one, and before a fire that burnt down many of the mills in the area in 1790, the town was called Coryell's Ferry. The hotel did a few things during the Revolutionary War, the creepiest of which I will get to a little later. But one really notable thing is that George Washington stayed there with his troops.
Washington is like all over the Pennsylvania, New Jersey
Absolutely.
Area.
Well, in Easton, when you're going like towards Southside, there's like a mural, or at least there was, they might have changed it by now, but there's a mural of like Washington crossing the Delaware because you go right across the Delaware because Easton is connected by a bridge to Phillipsburg, New Jersey, and the water underneath is the Delaware River.
I didn't know that. That's cool.
Yeah. By 1828, the ferry had stopped running since a bridge was built across the river, and on February 22nd, 1828, at a celebration, possibly for Washington's birthday, the name was changed to the Logan Inn, or the Logan House. The legend as to how the name came to be involves the metal cutout of a Native American chief that sat atop the building for 50 years and can still be seen sporadically today. The legend goes that the Lenni Lenape chief, my people, like I said in episode one.
Your people!
Who was said to be kind with the settlers, became friends with James Logan, the secretary to William Penn, and as a sign of admiration, took Logan's name. It's kind of funny because my family, it's just really weird. We're related to both the Lenape Native Americans who had their land stolen from them in the Walking Purchase, and also the people that bought it from them, from William Penn's sons. Yeah.
It's a bit of internal conflict.
Yeah, I was born to hate myself. What can I say?
Thanksgiving must be super interesting at your house.
It's, yeah, I eat a lot of mac and cheese because I'm trying to be nonconformist. So that was the history of the Logan Inn. And now we're going to get into more of the spooky, which is what you came here to hear anyway.
I need more wine for this.
Of course, everybody does. So drink up, everybody. Not that I'm encouraging alcoholism in any way. If you have a problem, please get help.
Well, I mean, you're driving, so I can totally have more wine.
Exactly. So people who stay at the inn report windows throwing themselves open in the middle of the night, cold spots, and a slew of ghosts have been sighted all over the hotel. The ghost of Aaron Burr is said to still haunt the building.
Aaron Burr, like the Hamilton, I shot Hamilton?
Exactly. Yes. He actually went there after his duel with Alexander Hamilton.
Aaron Burr is the worst.
He is kind of the worst, yes. Boo to Burr.
Boober.
Boober. Yeah, hashtag that on, I don't know, Twitter or something.
The tweets.
Yeah. Hashtag Boober. We'll start a revolution. So there's the ghost of a soldier that many people have seen wandering around the building in places like the bar, the dining room, and the basement.
Like a Revolutionary War soldier, right?
Yes, correct. They don't know his name, but he's probably there because during the Revolutionary War, this is the part that I told you I was going to get to later, the bodies of the soldiers who died in battle were kept in the basement until they could receive proper funeral rites after the winter had passed because the ground was too hard to dig their graves.
Oh, so you gotta do something. So it's like cold storage in the basement.
Exactly. They're just like, hey, let's stick them in the basement of this inn because that sounds like a great idea and will not result in any hauntings whatsoever.
They didn't know. It was a new world.
It was a new world. Yes. Pocahontas 2, the new world or whatever it was called.
They made a second Pocahontas?
They did. It was terrible. Don't watch it. It's really horrible and not all historically accurate. Not that the first one was either.
But Colors of the Wind isn't part of history.
Back to the Logan Inn.
So you're telling me about the bodies they stored in the basement during the Revolutionary War.
Exactly. And the ghost soldier that's walking around that might be from that. And this may or may not be the same ghost, but there's a rumor that one of the soldier ghosts, because there's a few of them there, woke up after being presumed dead in the basement of the Logan Inn and cried out for help. And no one heard him, so he died of his injuries. And that's really sad, because, I mean, think about it. You are in this basement, you wake up, you're crying for help because you're still alive, surrounded by all of your dead comrades in arms.
Yeah, it's a little slice of hell. I can understand why that might precipitate some kind of haunting activity.
Absolutely, I would haunt the shit out of that place. He's also said, not this ghost, or maybe that ghost, we still don't know, is said to turn off any lights that are left on and do security rounds and move beer kegs around the basement. I kind of think he's just like helping out. He just wants to be helpful.
Yeah, that sounds like really positive because sometimes you hear about those hauntings where it's like a little more mischievous, where like they'll move stuff on like the employees, but this is like, oh, you left the light on.
Let me get that for you. And I'll do the job that no one wants to do. I'll move the beer kegs.
Still on duty.
Exactly. I mean, that would kind of suck to be that person in the afterlife being like, I'm still drudging through work. One of the scarier unexplained happenings occurred in 1946 when a palm reader named Parker Dane was working at a street fair being hosted in the parking lot of the Logan Inn when a blood-curdling scream that was almost unbearable, quote-unquote, along with some weeping sounds, was heard from the inside. They said it sounded like a child, but no one could be found. Everyone around heard it, but like I said, no one saw a child. No one saw a child at all. It even happened again the next year and the year after that.
That's so creepy.
Yeah, it just kept happening one time a year, every year at that fair.
I would, not go to that fair. It's like, oh, you're going to the fair, you shoot the screaming child.
Do you want
to
hear a screaming child? I mean,
No, not normally.
All I, need to do is visit my friends with kids and I can hear that.
But... I mean, I just go out for dinner.
Yeah, exactly. You normally hear that in a restaurant. You are right. It's very creepy, and needless to say, they just stopped having the thing there because, three times is too much to be hearing random disembodied screaming of a child. In my humble opinion.
Whose kid is that? I don't know.
I don't know, not mine.
Little Timmy, is that you?
No, he fell down a well, and Lassie had to save him.
Rough. Maybe it was Timmy, though.
It could have been Timmy, you never know. There's apparently an old family portrait outside of room 6 where the mother of a former owner of the building in the 70s who had lost it due to debt is said to haunt. Apparently her name is Emily Lutz. So room 6, like I said, is supposed to be the most haunted room with the most activity. People who have stayed there reported the heat turning up and down on its own, tugging of the blankets when guests are trying to sleep. Emily taps on people's feet. Emily's also said to move objects around. I think she's just trying to be helpful, but I'm not sure. I'll tell my story later.
Did you stay in room 6?
I did. I didn't stay in room 6. I didn't know about room 6 at the time. Oh. I think I stayed in room 8 or something.
Is that on the same floor? Are they numbered that way?
Yeah. My sister stayed in the attic. Well, it's the upstairs room, which is pretty much the attic. And I've heard a lot of stuff about that too.
Oh. Side note, I'd be super aggravated if I was just trying to take a nice restful night's sleep and all this business is happening.
Exactly. Yeah, I'd be pissed off too. I didn't have anything like that happen, but like I said, I'll tell mine later. Emily also moves objects around, and like I said, she's trying to be helpful. But I think when she's pulling the pillows out from people's heads, she's probably well, I need to fix this room up, and doesn't really realize that someone's sleeping there. So someone that I read a review on said that she threw their shoes across the room.
While they were sleeping?
I don't know if they were sleeping or not, but that seems pretty crazy and not something I'd like to happen to me.
Do you think a lot of people call up and request the haunted rooms?
Absolutely they do. That's a big thing in haunted hotels. I know I will be doing that in the near future whenever I stay anywhere.
I'm totally going to be at the Best Western down the road.
So in the same room, people report seeing a man standing in the bathroom behind them when they look in the mirror. But when they turn around, he's gone. And sometimes he cries in the middle of the night. And that's not something that I'd be having. I'd be out of there.
No, that's literally one of the scariest things to me.
Yep.
It's so for years, having wearing contacts and glasses, when you take them out, you're in a bathroom.
Mm-hmm.
And you pop them out and you're oh, because your eyes can actually breathe again. And then I would be so freaked out. And I'm already freaked out because I have an overactive imagination and stuff when I'm in a dark room. I have definitely, made my wife before, get out of bed to rearrange the bathrobe on the back of the door because it looks like a person. I can't do it. And I would lose it if I, pop my contacts out, look up, and see this, shadowy figure of someone standing behind me. I would full-on freak out, and I also would not be having that.
I've done that in the middle of the night where I'm oh, what is that? Someone's staring at me. I need to turn on the light. And then it's oh. It's just the pile of clothes that I left over there.
And you kind of knock it over because you're
no, you're not going to stare at me.
Sorry.
That's completely fine. So people have also reported feeling pressing on their chests in the middle of the night. And when they wake, they see a misty figure, which they think is Emily.
So in room 6, there's Emily Lutz, who's the owner's, one of the former owner's mothers.
Yes.
And then there's also this figure, this male figure that appears in the mirror and disappears, but it will cry in the middle of the night.
Yes.
There's a lot of stuff focused on this one room.
It's the emo ghost.
The emo ghost.
Yeah, room 6 is like I said, the most haunted room with the most activity. So I don't understand what it is about room 6, but something about room 6.
I wonder where it's located in the hotel, if it's like a centralized room or not.
I think it's pretty much toward the middle of the hallway, if I remember correctly. Huh.
Like a crossroads almost.
Kind of, I guess that could be something.
So the Misty Chest Compressions.
Yeah, Misty Chest Compressions.
That's a great stripper name.
It really is. Misty Chest Compressions. Oh, that's horrible. That's great. It's feeling pressing on the chest. There we go. So pillows are pulled out from under people's heads, which I think I mentioned. Crying can be heard. in room 6, along with apparitions of 2 children who are believed to have lived and died in the Logan Inn long ago. There's also a picture in the lobby that's supposed to smell like lavender, and lavender can be smelled throughout the other parts of the hotel as well. And people also report the ghost of a little girl in the parking lot who fell off a bridge and drowned. While it didn't say this in my research, that could explain the screaming they heard during the street fair each year. That's just my thought on it, anyway.
Hmm.
Also, there's a Hessian soldier.
Of course there is.
Of course, because now everything leads back to Ichabod Crane, like you mentioned before. There's also the ghost of a Hessian soldier that wanders around in the basement.
I feel like, and maybe this is just my impression, there's a lot of, especially Revolutionary War era inns in like the northeastern part of the country.
Yeah.
And there's always like a Hessian soldier hanging out in the basement because there were so many.
There was a lot, yeah.
Like hired mercenary Hessians. And I didn't know this, but apparently like Hessian soldiers were like the creme de la creme.
Yep.
And like that's where like the best weapons were made. Like the like in Germany, like Hessia or Hess?
Something, I don't know what it was called.
Was like the war machine.
Yeah.
And I'm like, that's so creepy. I can't even think of a modern equivalent. It's just always a Hessian. And they're green uniforms.
Exactly, yeah. They're everywhere back then. And just to finish up my story, I'm going to tell you both my sister's story and my story of staying at the Logan Inn. First of all, my sister. She stayed, like I said, in the room that's like kind of like upstairs in the attic. And she, when I think they were trying to go out to dinner or something like that, she and her husband, she had her shoes stolen from her. And then she was looking everywhere. And sure enough, she found them in the exact same spot that she had looked like 12 times. Right under the chair. Right there the entire time.
So it's literally the last place she looked, but also like the second to last and the third to last.
Exactly. She looked there several times and it was suddenly right back there. When I stayed there, not only did I smell lavender, which I did not know was a thing until doing this research.
Does lavender have any kind of like significance in terms of like, I always think of lavender as a very soothing scent.
It was her perfume.
Oh, Emily's perfume.
Yeah, Emily's perfume. Huh. But I just thought like the cleaning staff had gone heavy on like whatever they were spraying in the hallways or something. And I was like, oh, well, this is very strong lavender scent. But apparently it was Emily. I'm pretty sure I saw something misty. Again, thought nothing of it.
Maybe your contact got a little...
Exactly. Yeah, I mean, I used to sleep in them back then, which... Sorry, eye doctor, if you're listening to this. I also had weird sleep paralysis, which I have sleep paralysis a lot of the time.
Really?
Yeah, unfortunately.
That's absolutely terrifying.
It is terrifying. I hate it, and I wish it wouldn't happen to me.
I think I have sleep paralysis, and, like, I'll wake up in a panic, and it turns out it's just my one cat. Because he really wants to be pet in the middle of the night, and he'll, like, creep up onto my chest and, like, look at me. And he's the one that doesn't meow. He just, like, squeaks.
Oh, God. Okay.
So I wake up to, like, this little, like, and he has a white face. And he's just like, meep. And I'm like, oh, I can't breathe. And I'm like, it's a ghost. It's not. It's just
so he's Glenn Close in Fatal Attraction. Just like, I won't be ignored, Dan.
I mean, essentially, yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Sorry, you were saying sleep paralysis.
Yeah, sleep paralysis. That's where I was.
Was it worse at the Logan Inn or just, like, typical?
It was different at the Logan Inn. Because normally I see shadow people, like a lot of people report seeing... Or I'll see other creepy stuff. This was weird. I felt someone hug me and kiss me on, like, the forehead.
I mean, soothing but creepy.
And then after that, I was able to move because I really struggled once arms went around me. I mean, you know, as you do.
You got, like, a guardian angel out there.
I think it might have been Emily.
Hmm.
It's possible. And then the last thing that happened there was when we were trying to leave. We had to check out, so we were getting everything ready. Back before... Netflix was a thing. My friend had a PSP, which he had extensively modded. So he could, like, you know, watch movies and store stuff like that on there. So he had tons of movies downloaded on it. He was going to... He brought it so we could just watch stuff.
Mm-hmm.
He put it in this desk that was in the room. That's where we kept it. That's where it was. We both saw it there, then went to take our showers and went to pack up. Packing up, we could not find the PSP. It was gone from the dresser. We looked forever, could not find it. And eventually, right near the time we needed to check out, we found it in the exact same spot we'd been looking, just like my sister with the shoes.
Emily!
Damn it, Emily. Don't you have any other hobbies besides stealing people's stuff and pulling pillows out from people's heads? Oh, wait, she does. tugging on their feet in the middle of the night. I forgot about that. Thanks a lot, Emily.
Maybe she's playing like This Little Piggy Went to Market.
Maybe. I just, that's home. Not a good thing when it's a ghost. It's not a good thing when it's a person and you're an adult either. Little creepy.
I don't judge.
I mean, yeah, I mean, whatever floats your boat. Let your freak flag fly, as they say. But that is my story, and I'm sticking to it.
Well, I am excited to at least go to New Hope again. I probably won't go into the Logan Inn, except the bar, maybe.
Well, if we can book room 6, we're going to stay there together.
I am not, no!
Yes.
I will send my wife with you.
Okay, that's fine.
She will love it.
I love Ashley. We can do this.
I will be down the street at the Best Western, as I mentioned.
But think about it. Mm-hmm. If we go to the Logan Inn and stay in room 6, for any Patreon donors, we can videotape it and tell them about our experience.
I mean, I'm thinking about it.
Okay. You know, do it for the fans that we don't have yet, because it's only episode 2 and no one's listening.
If enough folks post on our Facebook or follow us on Instagram and ask us to stay at the Logan Inn, I will suck it up and do it.
You better.
For the people.
For the people. All right.
Well, that just
now that we've rambled forever on this episode.
Now that I will have 1,000 hours of audio to edit out. What's our closing?
Well, first of all,
so I'm really
Nicole,
channeling.
We start by telling people where they can contact us.
Oh, the pluggables.
Such as you can email us at roadsidehorrorshow@gmail.com. You can find us on Twitter.
We don't have a Twitter. I didn't set that up.
I thought you set up Twitter.
Did I set it up?
Yeah,
oh, we did.
You set up Twitter.
Shit, y'all.
Twitter at Roadside Horror Show. You can find us on Facebook.
And Instagram.
And Instagram at
Roadside
Horror Show.
When in doubt, look up Roadside Horror Show. You'll find us.
Somewhere out in the webs.
Let us know what you think. If there's any particular stories from your state that you want us to cover, please send them our way. We are happy to take a deeper dive into any of the spookier stories that you may have experienced. And hopefully, if we collect enough stories, we can share our listener experiences on the air.
Absolutely. We would love to read your letters. We'd love to hear from you. So please send them. And also, because we get depressed after doing these horrible stories most of the time, please send us pictures of your pets.
Oh, yeah. I have puppy fever right now, and I really want to get a dog, but I don't have the living situation that could support a dog.
Neither do I.
But I would love to live vicariously through you.
Exactly.
So please share them.
So thank you very much for tuning in, and please, like I said, email us. We really want to hear from you. Hope you enjoyed it.
Talk to y'all next time.
Bye.